Blog Talk Radio.
It is what it is.
Peace, peace, family. What's going on? We are back. Collective Minds Radio. This is your host, Brother Kev, with my co-host, my brother Mufasa Rod, and our lovely sister, Rigel Starr. What's up, y'all?
All praises is due. All praises is due.
All right, everybody, how was y'all week? Everybody had a good week?
Man, everything went good my way. Everything went good my way.
Celebrated two birthdays.
That's right. That's right. I had two birthdays.
Yeah.
Shout out to the birthdays. What season we
three
in?
Three birthdays.
This is July.
It's cancer.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's cancer
three
season.
Remember? Yeah, we had Micah, Nia, and Carter. And then also today is George Clinton's birthday. So shout out to all of them.
Shout out to George Clinton, the P-Funk.
Yeah, birthdays broke me down. Birthdays and took all my money. I'm sitting here rubbing two pennies. I ain't got two nickels. I'm rubbing two pennies together.
that's what they usually do. Especially when you got the little babies. When you get the little ones, it's like, man.
Man, hold up. My kid turned, my girl turned 18.
Oh, okay.
Shoot.
She's still a baby, though, now. Don't.
Man.
She
broke me down. Yeah, she sure is. It's like she done broke me down.
That's right.
Yeah, all right, broke me all the way down.
Yeah, before we get started, do y'all have any announcements that y'all want to make for the fam?
One announcement I want to make just again, giving my kid a happy birthday. Like I said, happy birthday to everybody who celebrates their birthday. You know, it only come around once a year. So to everybody who had a birthday today or during this past week, happy birthday from Collective Minds, Brother Mufasa, to you.
All right, indeed. Shout out to all the birthdays. And Rigel Starr, did you have any announcements?
Yeah, I don't think she said she had
none.
No
announcements.
No announcements, okay.
Thank you, Mufasa.
I do want to make one quick announcement. I don't know if y'all heard. I think I sent y'all the article. There was a brother that was in Central Florida, I want to say. I believe Clearwater, near Clearwater, Orlando area. And they say it was like a white man that comes to the store, harass people, and tries to start stuff. But this particular time, a man was in the store. His kids and wife was outside, from my understanding, outside in the car. And the guy was upset because they was parked in a handicapped spot. So he started, you know, going off on a woman and, you know, got cussing out. You can't really hear the audio on the video, but he starts going off on her. And the guy comes out, you know, like, what's going on, trying to see what's going on with his lady and with his kids. So, long story short, he ended up pushing the man to kind of give him the back off. He pushed him, dude fell down, and he kind of bagged up. And the white man pulls out a gun and shoots this man and kills him.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the travesty about this is, you know, the sheriff came out, and since they're in Florida, he says it's because of the Stand Your Ground law. So, basically, he like, you know, there's really no incident here. The man feared for his life, blah, blah, blah. We just got to, you know, we don't make the laws. We just enforce them. So the man ends up getting off basically for getting shoved on the ground and actually killing the man. So, you know, I just think that's significant. And, you know, people need to watch out when we out dealing with folks, especially in Florida. Like, this is the second time. Like, this didn't even go to trial like the Zimmerman thing. They basically just said, we not going to press charges. He got pushed down, and he was able to deport.
Now, wasn't this a new case, though? Didn't this just recently happen?
Yeah, this recently happened. This recently happened, but like I said, they just decided not to charge him. Go ahead.
Oh, because I was like, so you 100% sure they didn't charge you? The reason I was saying, because I heard somebody saying that because the victim was backing away, that they was going to go a different route with it. That they was going to come after them.
Right. Last I checked, and this was as of yesterday, they didn't charge them. The sheriff actually did a press conference about it and said, no, you know, we're not going to charge them. That's basically because of the stand your ground law.
Right.
You know, he's not going to get charged. So,
We broadcast here at Collective Minds. We broadcast now to St. Louis, Missouri. And if I'm not mistaken, Missouri has the stand your ground law also. So, throw that out there. You know, I ain't going to lie, brother. Some cat pushed me down like that. I'd probably be thinking about grabbing my pistol, too. I ain't even going for it.
I mean,
I'm getting old, Brother Kev. Look, I'm getting old. I can't, listen, if I was in my early 20s, even my 30s, you know, hey, I'd probably jump up, be ready to duke them out. But listen, I'm hitting that, you know, that mid-40 era, and, you know, I don't heal like I used to heal. So, you catch me on that right day, you done push me down. And, you know, I'm in fear. What you finna do to me? I ain't as quick as I used to be. You know, that concrete hurt. So I probably would have went to the thumper, too. You know what I'm saying? Just you never know the mindset. That's why when the dude came out, and, you know, we might do a whole other show on this, but when the dude came out, he should have used his verbal judo. But as soon as he pushed that man over, that was assault. That was assault. I mean, we got to keep it real. That was assault.
That was assault, but the man was backing off. Now, it'd be different if somebody walks up to you and pushes you for nothing. You know, from the story I'm hearing, the man was clearly trying to instigate and trying to, you know, get the man pissed off so he could do something to him so he can shoot him. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
we
definitely got to do a show on this because I got some stuff I won't say, but I'm going to wait.
All right, indeed. So, family, yeah, just check that out. That was in Florida. That's something that just happened recently. You know, so just check that out and see what you're thinking. We'll probably do a future show on Stand Your Ground and all that type of stuff. So, again, this is Collective Minds Radio. And today, I don't know what that was, but I'm going to act like I didn't hear it and keep going. But today we are talking about the future of black people or the state of black people in 100 years. So we trying to put on our goggles, trying to bring out the crystal ball, trying to look into the future and see what will be the state of black people in the next 100 years. Are you guys optimistic about the future of black people, or are you guys pessimistic? Do you see things getting better? Do you see things getting worse? Let's put on our goggles. Let's put some stuff out there in the ethers, because a lot of these thoughts that we're having, you know, will probably come into fruition, because we create our reality by our thoughts. So we want to know what the family thinks. Give us a call. We're talking about the state of black people in 100 years. The number is 929-477-1697. And so now what I want to do just before we get started, and then I'll let you go, Mufasa, just give a breakdown. So for me, in order to turn into the future, I think it's important that we kind of look in the past and see what was going on, you know, during black America in 1918. So I just came up with a few little bullet points or whatever as what was going on in black America around that time. Number one, Marcus Garvey established the Universal Negro Improvement Association, which was in 1914. That was kind of around the same time. So we got the Marcus Garvey Pan-African movement really going strong around this time. Okay. We also had the Harlem Renaissance going on, which was basically a renaissance of artists, literary people, intellectuals, you know, doing things and creating a black mindset and a black movement out of Harlem. And also around that time, well, 8 years prior, the NAACP was established in 1910, okay? And many people may not know it was founded by three white people, and also they threw W.E.B. Du Bois in there. So the NAACP was founded in 1910. The Apollo Theater was established in 1913. Also around this time, around 1918, a lot of black people were migrating from the South to the North. So they were escaping, quote unquote, Jim Crow in the South, harassments, lynchings, and things like that to move to the North, only to find that the things were kind of similar going on in the North, okay? And one of the things that was happening in the North, now this is in East St. Louis, right across the bridge from where we're actually broadcasting. In East St. Louis, there was a quote-unquote race riot, which I don't like the term race riot, because basically what it was, in my opinion, I think we need to use the correct words, was white terrorism, terrorizing black people due to the fact that they felt like the black people of East St. Louis, of East St. Louis, was taking their quote-unquote jobs. And the riots happened again in 1917 in, I believe, June or July. It was a two-day riot that killed anywhere between 40 to 200 black people, and it also displaced thousands of black families. They burned houses. They just basically went through the town and terrorized. And this happened in a lot of cities in the country. We're talking about Philly, Chicago, Boston. I mean, you name it, anywhere that black people were trying to establish themselves and work and create communities and do for themselves, these things happen. White terrorism, they call them race riots, which I throw that term out the window. This was white terrorism, terrorizing black families, killing them, burning things down. You know, you've heard about Black Wall Street and things like that. Well, this happened in numerous cities in the country around this time. So this is kind of what was going on. On one end, you had blacks trying to do for themselves and establish these towns and cities. But then on the other hand, you have terrorism coming at them and, you know, trying to stop and impede on black people's progress. Okay, and then, like I said, you also have the Harlem Renaissance, where people are actually intellectualizing the state of black America and trying to put it in some type of, you know, artsy context and explain the plight of black America. So those are just some of the things, you know, that I came up with that was going on. Of course, there was a lot more going on, but that's just the basis of black America at the time. And also, this is a time of World War One as well. And a lot of black soldiers came home for World War One and were not able to get home loans based on, you know, the federal government not giving them loans, even though they just went and fought in the war. They came home and could not get home loans to establish themselves, while counterpart white soldiers were able to get these loans. So, you know, it was a lot of stuff going on. It was a turbulent time. Lynching was at an all-time high. Injustice was at an all-time high. And, you know, this was the state of black America at this time. So with that being said, we want to go the other direction and look forward into the future and see, you know, where we are today and where do you guys think we will be in the next 100 years. So give us a call. The number again is 929-477-1697. Now, my brother Mufasa, where do you see the state of black people in the next 100 years? And are you optimistic about this future?
Well, before I even go there, I want to just touch real quickly on what you just said about when you went back 100 years. Because I like you said about Marcus Garvey, who put together a profound program for black people at that time. You know, and they made the call was Africa for the Africans. And I'm just going to read y'all a paragraph out of his book, The Philosophy and Opinions of Marcus Garvey, real quick. Africa for the Africans. For 5 years, the Universal Negro Improvement Association has been advocating the cause of Africa for the Africans. That is, that the Negro peoples of the world should concentrate upon the object of building up for themselves a great nation in Africa. So that was the, you know, the foundation of what Marcus Garvey was all about at that time. So somewhere along the line between then and now, in my opinion, apparently that never happened. Some type
right.
of, for some reason, black people lost their way. You know, and that's what I'm really curious about. Why is it that we did not complete that program of making a nation for black people in Africa or even here? Because what we didn't allude to was also they came right after, you know, a little bit prior to, I mean, after 1918 in the 30s was the rise of Elijah Muhammad and the Nation of Islam, who wanted
that's right.
to build a program here in America for black people. So somewhere I can say between the past 100 years to now, we didn't do what we should have done. We didn't make a nation for black people. And it doesn't have to be, you know, hating on other races. We just needed something of our own. So I'm confused and still trying to figure out why we didn't set those, you know, those precedents. So moving forward into the next 100 years, I see us suffering from not like we suffered from white supremacy in the past, but I say we suffer from the illusion of inclusion. That's what we suffer for more so than white supremacy, because now
right.
you got black people who are successful, but they don't have that self-love for their people to do before community. So I think, like
right.
I said, and I'm going to go too hard now, we'll be going to it later, but from here to the next 100 years, I feel like we'll continue to suffer from that illusion of inclusion unless something drastic happens to get us back to the programs of Marcus Garvey or Elijah Muhammad.
Indeed, indeed. And callers, please sit tight. We will be taking calls here in a second to let the family chime in. Again, it's Collective Minds Radio, and we are talking about the state of Black America in the next 100 years. And for Brother Kev, now, I'm somewhat optimistic about the future of Black America. I think, you know, unfortunately, I think a lot of our people do suffer, like you say, from the illusion of inclusion, and I think a lot of our people will suffer due to that. But I think there is a segment of black people who understand the importance of, you know, black empowerment, black economic empowerment, working with each other, you know, getting on a code. I think there is a large segment that do understand that and are moving towards that. And I feel like what's going to happen, unfortunately, like I mentioned, the white terrorism that they call race riots, I think the white supremacists amongst us are going to become more violent. You know, I think because they see that their numbers are dwindling and they don't want the quote-unquote browning of America to continue happen. So I think as we see with or as we saw with the lynchings back in the day, I think they're going to, like I say, become more violent towards minorities, towards black people. You know, I just see that, like I said, when we mentioned the shooting down in Florida, he got off. We, you know, we look at the shootings with police. And then also, because of the system of white supremacy, we got to look at the killings of black among black people. You know what I'm saying? Which happens under the system by default. So I think with that being said, I'm optimistic, but I think it's going to get a little bit worse before it gets better, meaning we're going to see a lot of incidents of black death. Yeah, you know, I think it's going to get a little more worse, but I do see eventually that it is going to get better. Just based on the evolution of humans and of people, I think it's going to get better as we move forward, because what I do notice is we're moving into a time of truth, and a lot of truth is being revealed. You know, a lot of people are tired of hiding their feelings. People want to come out and say how they feel. They don't want to sugarcoat nothing. They don't want to be politically correct. They just want to tell you how they feel, which, in my opinion, I think that's a good thing. You know, so I think as the truth gets revealed and more things are seen and the veil is lifted, I think black people are going to have to either see things for what they are or stay in that, stay in that confused mind state of the illusion of inclusion, like my brother Mufasa said. So I don't know if you want to chime in, Rigel Starr, if you want to go to the call lines.
We can go to the text caller. Area code 336-965. Call in our comment.
He could have bought dad a
few. Well, let's try another caller. This is Zoo caller 314. 677, Carly, you have a question or a comment?
I actually just joined. I haven't really listened enough to have a comment, but just on the topic in general, mm-hmm. I don't know, the state of Africans in this country. It's kind of, it's hard to be optimistic when we see everything that's happened around us. There's no, there's nothing to really sit and say, oh, I think things are going to get better, because in actuality, it seems like history is really repeating itself as far as the dominant powers just being more overt about their actions and showing us who has the power. And so it's hard to be optimistic when we see some of the statistical numbers that we see as far as just healthcare and education and housing opportunities and just access to the things that tend to make people life better from a materialistic standpoint. But from a spiritual standpoint, you know, you can always be optimistic that things will get better because people will become more in touch with their spiritual self. But from just this world and focusing on materialism, I can't see things getting better for black people. I just see things getting worse. Less access, less education, fewer options, more incarceration, more injustices and all those things. And so the heartbreaking part is us as African Americans, a lot of us Africans have chosen to allow the dominant culture to shape who we are in our thinking. And so some of the things that we used to do, they kind of showed our level of pride and intelligence. We kind of have decided that we're just going to go into this whole groupthink type mentality. And so whatever social media says is cool or acceptable or what we should believe in, we begin to believe in it. And I would say one of the most just disheartening things about our youth in the future is that a lot of our youth don't understand that are do not believe that they are discriminated against or that racism exists. Some of them may even feel like they've never been stereotyped or, you know, it's almost like they just don't believe what is happening to them because they feel like, no, such and such is nice to me. And so because history is being whitewashed and history, people are just not telling the truth.
And so when
our youth don't see that they are being oppressed, then how can there be optimism? Because you won't fight for something that you don't know that you don't have.
That is true. Now, I will say, you made a good point, Colin. What I will say, I'm going to say this real quick. I think, because there's two sides of me. Brother Kev is not that optimistic about the state of black people. But Cosmic Kev, which is my spiritual higher self, is optimistic. So I think the caller made a good point because when you look at the state and you look at black people, you know, they say the definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over and expecting.
I'm hearing some background noise.
Hello? You hear that?
Yeah, I'm hearing some noise.
I'm hearing background noise too. You can mute your line if you're moving. So they say that the insanity is doing the same thing over and over and expecting different results. Now, in 1918 specifically, the NAACP organized a silent march in response to lynchings, killings, and social injustices of black people. Now, it's 2018, and we are still marching because of these things. You see, it's 2018, and we are still marching because of injustice, social injustice in regards to black people. So now in 2118, are we still going to be marching about social injustice, or are we going to take it upon ourselves to establish a new reality for ourselves? I mean, that's just a question I'm just throwing out there. Because it seems like we're going through the same motions,
It's like the caller said. I agree with everything that she said. That's why I don't look at – I'm not very optimistic of the future neither. It would take something like straight drastic, like for black people to get attacked and start getting thrown in FEMA camps for us to wake up and start getting back on the course of doing for self. You know, like I said earlier when I read out Marcus Garvey book, I read something else, and this is – coming from 100 years ago. You know, in his book, it's a chapter here that says lack of cooperation in the Negro race. And it reads, it is so hard, so difficult to find men who will stick to a purpose, who will maintain a principle for the work of that principle, for the good of that purpose. And if there is a race that needs such a man in the world today, God Almighty knows it is the race of which I am a member. The race needs men of vision and ability, men of character, and above all, men of honesty. And that is so hard to find. You know, and I'll stop right there. Now, we were struggling with that 100 years ago, and we're still struggling with that today. So
this is
moving forward 100 years ago, what is going to change, what is going to happen that will bring forth men who lack that type of integrity? It seems to me that the illusion of inclusion is all it's doing is pulling us further into, you know, forgetting who we truly are, forgetting what we've been through. You know, we want everything that, especially us here in North America, which is sad that it's growing into the world, but this culture that we are in is embedding in us, you know, ways to, how do I want to say this, to, you know, we're taking on characteristics basically of our oppressor. I just guess that's, I just had to say it like that. I was going to tiptoe around the tulips with it, but that's basically what it is. You know, we have taken on all those, you know, aspects of our oppressor. We've gotten away from nature. We've gotten away from being a righteous people. And 100 years from now, and like I said, that something drastic happens where we get beat over our head and start thrown into FEMA camps, what is going to make us wake up and say, look, we need to build something for ourselves? You know, that's the only way that we can truly be a strong, mighty people is to build something up for ourselves. You know, Elijah Muhammad left us with that message in 1974 when he passed that, you know, after his Savior's Day message was, do for self. I'm, you know, I leave my people, want y'all to do for self. So,
I mean, like what Carla said, I'm not very optimistic. We're the type of people
need a strong kick in the butt.
It is what it is.
Yeah, because, you know, we got to be forced. We have to be forced to do what we're supposed to do. And that's a shame. That is a shame.
Yeah, that is true. She made some great points. I don't know. She made some good points, and I think another key point that she made was talking about the kids. You know, we got the cliche that the children are the future, and it seems like she said the kids' mindset is they don't even know that war is being waged on them. You see, and those are my words. You know, there's a lot of warfare taking place that we have no idea that's going on because we don't see tanks and army fatigues and stuff like that. So we don't think it's a war going on, but there's different facets to war. And before you get to the physical war, it starts in the mind, and it starts with warfare, propaganda, ideologies, you know, and things like that. So she made a good point saying that the kids don't even recognize that they're being oppressed in a situation where they're grouped in and, you know, resources and stuff is being hoarded from there. They don't even see that particular reality. So I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing. You know, that's just a question to put it out there. I don't know if that's a good thing or bad thing.
I do know. I use love, money, and power, right? You look at the videos that you look at, it's all about money, you know, cars and clothes and jewelry and having women, the women looking like, you know, whores. You know, we promote an image that we need to stay away from, but the kids are attracted to that. So if the youth are attracted to that, well, I mean, we are people, we are our youth. Especially our women.
Right.
So if our young females are attracted to this type of life, as they produce children, you know, they raise their children on that same type of stuff.
Right.
And that's
right.
A major problem in our community is the women are raising the children on that type of foolishness. You know, the young men, they grow up looking at that type of stuff. They don't want to be committed to a woman. You know, they basically get to a point where they still misuse the women. Or now even our men have become so feminine that they want a woman to take care of them. They don't even know how to be a man. And, you know, all this stuff comes in the training of children. And if we could train our children right in some type of way, get them off of this type of, you know, mind control, you know, and put their heads the right thing, maybe we could turn this thing around. But, you know, we got this, like I said, I keep saying this illusion of inclusion, where, hey, I can go out here and be a rapper and a trapper and make money and I'm happy. I'm happy with a couple of dollars and spending them on some fancy clothes and, you know, some jewelry and stuff like that. I'm cool. They're not thinking that their minds ain't on nation building, on nationhood. They minds on self-preservation.
Right. And assimilation. Like I said, we've assimilated so much into American culture to where we don't really have a culture of our own. You know, there were certain things within Black culture that was just taboo or things we didn't do. And we're talking about coming out of slavery we had a little more protection as far as our culture and how we did things amongst each other. But the more and more we assimilate into this culture, it seems like we lose that part of our culture that protects us from certain things. And now we're just assimilating. And like you said, we're acting just like we have the mindset of the oppressor. So our oppressor doesn't like black people. We don't like black people. We don't like ourselves. We don't like each other. And we act that out on each other, you know, like we talked about last week, because it's the easier target. You know, it's easier to pick on somebody that's just as weak as you as opposed to going after the, you know, the big bad man or the big oppressor. You know, it's just easier to attack people that are close to you. So I think moving forward, what we got to do is we need to establish, like I say, a culture, and we need to establish a code. That's going to be very difficult considering the machine of America and the propaganda and the money, the materialism, the all that type of, you know, the sex.
And that's
the
worldwide,
money,
and it's spreading.
Yeah, that's worldwide. It's spreading, right.
Like a disease.
It's very, yeah, exactly. And it's very hard to combat with some righteousness when you're seeing foolishness on the other side. You're seeing so much of it. You know, and they make it look so good, and they make it, you know, put glitter and lights and all type of stuff to it that makes the foolishness look so attractive.
Shiny
stuff.
Shiny
to where you can, you know, like Elijah Muhammad said, if you put a clean glass next to a dirty glass, people would automatically choose the clean glass. But what if the dirty glass is in a mug with glitter and lights and you know what I'm saying? It's covered up with shiny things and it looks good, it's sparkling, and you got just a regular old clean glass next to it. People can't tell the difference these days.
Good one.
And that's really putting us in a situation to where we're trying to crawl out of something, but at the same time we're defeating ourselves by playing into this materialism game and this individualism of America, you know, where it's just competition. You got to crush your competition. You got to go against each other. You're not supposed to work together and all these type of things that is being fed to us. On the other hand, like I say, economically and socially, we're all at the bottom. And everybody knows that. I think the world knows how, you know, black people have been treated, but it's just something that, you know, you don't really talk about, or you're allowed to do things that's not going to really help the people, but it looks good on the surface, like a turkey drive or some crazy stuff like that. You know what I'm saying? So, until we recognize the situation that we're in, it's going to be difficult to get out. And with the youth assimilating to this culture, you know, that's going to be very difficult. But like I said, Cosmic Kev is optimistic because spiritually I know even if it does take a major event, spiritually we're going to come up out of this. You know what I'm saying? The last shall be first and the first shall be last.
Spiritually, you
know,
spiritual always wins. Let's go to the call. Let's go. Take caller 314-381. Call, you have a question or a comment?
Yeah, I was going to ask a question. How you guys doing?
Yes, sir.
Hey, how you doing?
Doing well. How you doing, caller? Thanks for calling.
Getting ready to make some people mad, of course.
You know how you do.
Let me tell you something. Blacks in America,
sometimes
culture.
Sometimes the truth hurts, don't it? Sometimes the truth hurts.
Yeah, blacks in America's culture is American culture in different variations. They are United States citizens, and they expect what any other citizen have. You know where the line is going to be drawn. The line is going to be drawn between those blacks and these blacks, and I mean, you just take Chicago. You had 3,000 blacks move out of North Shore, 3,000 millionaires move out of North Shore because they didn't want to be associated and caught up in all the crime and stuff that's going on in that city. And so they said enough with it. And you can't say whites hate you. Hey, your best schools in the city of St. Louis in this area are ran and provided by whites. You know what they are? Cardinal Ritter, Loyola Academy, right behind Cardinal Ritter, City School there on Kings Highway across from Matthew Dickey's, and there's another one, I just can't think of the name of it. White folks put those schools together. Matter of fact, at Cardinal Ritter, I was privileged to know people tell me about the emails that they receive where whites is asking, why in the heck are we continue to support this? And the reason why is the kids that's coming out of public schools going into Cardinal Ritter, they are not able to carry the rigors that's required for them to be truly, you know, a college prep. Not enough, not all of them. And when they get to these, the next step, you know, and getting into college, you know, they start having problems. Lowell Academy is the Jesuits run that, and it's designed to feed students coming out of grade school into Cardinal Ritter. Trinity out there on Bell Fountain Road, it's another school that's ran by white orthodoxies to feed black kids into Vianney, Cardinal Ritter, and these Catholic high schools. CVC, they allow blacks to come out there. So if white folks didn't care, they wouldn't be doing this because they spend the biggest hunk of money for it out of some benevolence. Another point, this stuff about blacks having to separate. You know, we say that integration was bad. But heck, when you look at all your leaders, they either got black or white mothers or fathers. Du Bois had a white father, Frederick Douglass, Adam Clayton Powell. You go back before that, you had those other groups like Paul Kofi, John Rushroom, those are all mulattoes, William Wells, Samuel Cordish, Harry Jack Jacobs, Phyllis Wheatley.
Right.
So, I mean, think about what's being said here. And here's another thing, too. 15 million members of the Southern Baptists are black. You have another, 5 or 7 million that's belong to the Church of God in Christ. They are black. In Memphis, you got 50,000 Church of God in Christ. And you got 3 to 5 million Catholics. They all believe in heaven and hell. They don't believe in all that other stuff, ancient Egypt and all that stuff. They don't believe in that. They believe in heaven and hell.
Right. That may be part of the problem, too.
Well, no, but you can't say it's the problem, brother. And you can't tell these people what they're doing is wrong when you don't have anything that can compare to a heaven that you can offer them. That's where the problem is.
The reality is they're not getting to heaven, and the problem is what they're teaching us is to wait on heaven when we die. You see, that's a mind trick, and it's scaring people of death, for one. That's another thing that black people have to get out of, is we're so scared of death. That needs
well,
to
let
be
me
thrown
ask,
out.
Let me,
you
let,
cannot liberate yourself if you're scared to die, period.
Let's analyze what you just said. Let's analyze this. I heard you guys saying that blacks need to separate. Where are you going to separate to? And where are you going? You're going to have your own nation. You can't have a nation without having what white folks produce in order to provide for that nation. When you get up wherever you're sitting right now and you walk to the wall and hit a switch, something positive happened. Either the lights come on or the lights go off. When you go in the toilet and flush it, something positive happens. When you go into the kitchen and turn on the faucet, clean water comes out of it to wash your dishes or whatever. All that is provided by technology, innovation. The means to are made by white companies or European companies. Although black companies make that stuff. That's no problem coming to just making the needs to produce electricity, the needs to treat sewage, the needs to purify water. No black companies make that. So if you went to wherever, I mean, your people are going to be leaving you as quick as they can.
Well, let me add this in right quick.
That's just a matter of infrastructure, though. Go ahead. That's just a matter of infrastructure that we can establish on our own. That's nothing. That's technology
you gonna
that
get
anybody
turbines,
can do if you have the material.
Where are you going to get turbines to produce electrical energy? General Electric, Siemens don't went out of business. Western House, they don't know if it's making
generators,
it. Some
solar panels.
You can't run those city off of that kind of stuff.
All right. Well, let me ask you this, brother. Let me ask you this.
Yeah.
Let me ask you a question.
Uh-huh.
Because I agree with everything that you're saying. I do agree with that. But I have to ask you this. These other people who, like you said, who got these turbines and who make the electric cup, where did they get it from?
They make them.
They make them, right?
Yes.
So eventually, we will have to learn how to make our own.
Whose school are you
going
to go to?
I mean, you have to do that. And
yeah,
if we keep getting spoon-fed, if we keep going by this illusion of inclusion and holding hands with these people, how are we going to ever get to the point where we can say,
yeah,
look.
Yeah, I understand, but let me ask you a quick question. Whose schools are you going – where are you going to build schools to teach your kids that? Because now think about this now. The blacks that's already engineers and so forth, although their numbers is not respective of their percentage in the population, they ain't going for that. They got jobs that pay well, salaries and income. They got pensions. They got insurance plans. They got annuities. They raising their kids, sending them to college. They have homes and wives. They not going to be going on a tangent to do something like that.
So you,
I mean, would
you basically answering? You basically answering the question to the problem. The problem is the illusion of inclusion, because we will sell out for self-preservation over what we need to do for our people.
Yeah, but they are included. When you look at the downtown skyline, you had a black man put up a lot of those buildings. So you think he's gonna go someplace to an African forest for somebody on the whim that they know? It's not going to happen. And if it does, I'm standing here waiting to see it. I think that the thing that needs to be done is to provide for your children here in this society. You can't, even if you went to start a business in another country, if you don't have a viable business that's working and providing capital here in the United States, how are you ever going to do it abroad? It don't work that way.
Right.
People
start
off in a center point, then they move abroad. And the best center point for you to start off, believe it or not, is here in the United States. Where else can you have – you can start a business in the United States in days. You go someplace else, it takes months.
That is
and
true.
I agree with that.
That is true.
I agree with that.
That
so let
true.
Me ask you this. When you look at the program that Elijah Muhammad set down before he passed, and they had businesses popping up, and then when he passed, his son comes in and liquidates everything. I mean, that show right there that we could do.
Now,
I
take my head off to Elijah
Muhammad.
Elijah Muhammad, but he had a small group that done that. And Brother Silas has got farms down in Georgia now. Ain't no members of the Nation of Islam going down there doing anything.
Well, I take
because
that back.
Because
they
come
from where they are. We just brought 700 of them watermelons from up there. And by the way, family, they was the best watermelons I've ate in my life.
Yeah, and you kept them to yourself. You didn't tell me about them.
Shout out to the farms down there. If you're just joining us, this Collective Minds Radio, we are discussing the state.
Now, let me give you a solution.
Next 100 years. Hold on 1 second. Give us a call, family. The number is 929-477-1697. Go ahead, caller, with the solution. That's
your solution is one of two things. If you want to look at what blacks are doing well now, like those that's in the Black Enterprise Top 100 businesses, if it's something that they're doing that can expand in the area that you are doing, put a plan together, then go to them and say, hey, like, for instance, Hightower Petroleum Company down in Ohio, Cleveland. Hell, start a company, and bid on supplying St. Louis Public School District, bid on supplying Lambert, Spark Field, these airports with jet fuel and other lubricants. Then you go down and talk to Hightower. Can you give me a price? They'll give you a price which will probably be competitive, and you can use your affirmative action to get into those positions. So that's one way to do it. Another way to do it is to provide the education and the training and the skills that your children will need to compete for, say, like the 270-some-odd thousand pilots that's going to be needed by commercial airlines here in this country. Set up in the in your organizations, your churches, get flight simulators so that these kids in elementary schools can start learning how to fly. They can learn avionics. Hell, Boeing would even help contribute to that because they're going to know they need prowess. Mm-hmm. Then teach your children about all the other things they need to know and get a good education. You want to get a good job and get married and have kids.
I heard that. Brother, hey, brother, before you go, let me ask you one other question, brother.
Now, yes, sir.
Because everything you said was on point. Have you ever thought about this as well? What can we do? How do we get our youth to want to get more involved with nation building, to love nation building? Have you ever thought about that?
Well, they already want to do that. No child wake up in the morning wanting to be a failure. It's these knuckleheads that's letting them fail. I mean, tell me a child, point me a child that want to be a failure. None of them. They want to succeed. You have to provide them with the things that they can see relevant to what you're trying to do. I took from Pomoja 2 busloads of black students there in Pomoja, there on the Enright off of Vanderbilt.
Yeah.
I done it under the pretense of food labels so that they could read food labels and determine what's good and what's bad. And then I told them to get $5 from their parents in the grocery list. We're going over to Yours Market. And on the way, I took them downtown and showed them the buildings that a black person put up. So that was a teaching moment. Hopefully, they would carry it on beyond their present position in life. So that's the things you got to do.
Right. I 100% agree. You do know they got the high school started, right?
Yeah, I know he's going over to Sumner.
Yeah, yeah.
But, you know,
so
it's hard to
–
he can
grow.
Feed kids from Pomoja over there, but you can't walk into no high school and change them into an African-centered thought. It just ain't going to work. Them kids too far gone.
Right. I think that's going to be the plan, that they're going to pump them from over there into the high school. So shout-out to Pomoja for, you know, doing a great thing with our youth.
This is the United States of America, and you're talking with American citizens. You can't be teaching these, and you ain't going to go in no classroom talking no other stuff because they ain't going to let you do it. They're going to run you out
of there. Thanks for the call, caller.
All right, then.
We got some more callers to get. I did want to touch on one thing you said because I think this is important too, because I'm in agreement with I think separation is good ideally, but I don't think it's realistic in this day and time. You know, I don't think black separation is actually realistic at this time due to the fact where are we going to go, and we still got a lot of in-house cleaning to do before we can establish a nation within ourselves. What I do think is realistic is if we take control of the communities where we dominate. You know, if we can establish a code and a culture where the communities where we dominate, we can take control, put the politicians in order. We should be controlling the schools in those areas, the hospitals, the infrastructure, the businesses, and so on and so forth. So I do think that is realistic within the next 100 years. But as far as separation, it would have to be something very drastic to totally separate and build a nation within a nation. So. I think the caller made a good point on that. If we want to get to another caller, can we do something, Roger Starr? Get to a call again. It's Collective Minds Radio, y'all. We were talking about the state of black people
here in the next 100 years? Are you optimistic about it? Are you pessimistic? Do you think things are going to get better, worse? Talk to us. Give us a call.
Okay, we're going to take caller 314-677. Caller, you have a question or a comment?
Well, yeah, I have a comment. I'm just kind of listening to the last caller and being the host who was in total agreement with that gentleman. I think that's kind of one of the issues that we have in our community, that we limit ourselves. And we are under this mind state that we need Europeans to help us do anything. When you say stuff like,
facts,
how you going to do this and how you going to do that, the same way they did it. Intelligence isn't just restricted to one melanin. I mean, intelligence, Africans are the most intelligent people God ever created. Everything that the Europeans have here in this country and abroad was stolen. The idea was stolen, the science was stolen, and the resources were stolen. So to
think
that the only way you can get ahead is by asking them for help, that's part of our problem. Until we learn that we need to become self-sufficient, then we are going to always be caught up in a cycle. And as far as those schools, those Catholic schools, and the kids are not prepared to go to college and all this and all that, that's very true. But that's not only in the African-American community. That's in the Americans. Because here in the United States of America, the arrogance of the dominant culture is because we are white America and we can create and run the world and we're this huge superpower, so we don't have to be on the same educational standards as other nations. Some of those same African nations that people tend to look down on, educationally, they are far and above what American students are, all American students. And so to think that white children have some advantage, we have to also remember white people tend to do this this thing. They kind of really good at making it seem like they're better than what they are. So a white student and a black student could be failing at the same rate. But because the system is set up to help white students, you'll never see their failures. On top of the fact that they're taught at a very young age that they are in control, that they are leaders, they're, I'm so confident, has a lot to do with whether people succeed or fail. And so it's just not good for us as a race of people, and I'm saying race from a social context because we know race is social. So it's not
good
for us as a race of people to feel that another race of people is more intelligent or more resourceful or can create things, and that we have to go to them for their resources in order to succeed. Now, we can separate economically. You know, we have all type of barriers, geographical barriers, that might restrict some of us from being able to just totally separate. You're right. We cannot just totally create a nation inside a nation, but we can become more economically empowered. And the thing that creates issue with us is that, and not just us, it's back to the whole, we have taken on the identity of our oppressor because we are spiritual people, but our oppressors are not. And when I'm saying, you know, you cannot separate that people of color all over this world are suffering at the hands of Europeans. Europeans have went into all nations with the exception of Asian nations. They went into Asia, but they was not successful. And they have colonized so many nations. And so you see so much poverty and destruction and war all throughout the world. Most of it was caused by some type of European interference. But it's really unfortunate and sad state with Africans. And that's another thing. You know, a lot of Africans here in America, and I'm talking about who we call African Americans or black folk, we don't like to be called Africans. But that's who we are, and that's what we are. You see no other group of people who deny their ancestry. But when it comes to African Americans, if you call certain African Americans, they will correct you and say, "I'm American." You know, no other group of people is ashamed of their heritage.
It is what it
no
is.
Matter where you are in the world, there's a concentration of black folks. They're Africans. They came there on the boat because we're all from Africa. But they have taught us to just be so filled with self-hate that we deny our roots. So if you do not know your roots, you cannot be proud of.
I'm from
science
Canada.
Started in Egypt. Science comes from Africa. The world began in Africa. And so if we cannot hold our heads up and say we are the beginning, everything flows from us. Knowledge, science, love, spirituality flows from the African self. But yet we have become so consumed with trying to imitate the people that put us in bondage that we feel that we need them. They need us. And as far as the school system is concerned, do not think that they're really trying to educate us. What they're really trying to do is prove the point that no matter what, we are inferior to them intellectually. So what they do is open these pseudo-Catholic Jesuit schools and put them in our communities and say that they're giving us this spectacular education. But if you take whatever book they have at Cardinal Ritter or whatever one of these urban Catholic schools you can name, and you compare to a textbook at a Catholic school out there in maybe West County, they're not just studying out the same books. However, they can be the same. Their curriculum is not the same. It is not.
Right, now,
you cannot students going from kindergarten to sixth grade never being exposed, or kindergarten or high school, never being exposed to calculus. If you don't know calculus and physics, how can you be an engineer? If you're not exposed to it, we're not even taught it. So when I graduated from a St. Louis public school, the highest level of math that was even offered to me was algebra. But I'm sure out in West County, those kids were taking calculus and physics. It wasn't even offered.
Right.
And then to say when you go into, I mean, so how do you know what you don't know? But the education system says, well, we're going to give these kids books that are 5 and 10 years old that are outdated. So the technology and the things that are being discussed in that book. So then to say, well, our kids don't want no better. And then just to focus on the educational system, our situation isn't about just one condition. There's so much systemic stuff going on that you just can't take a kid and put them in some type of DCEG school and expect them to excel when they're still coming home to just blight and just horrible and trauma.
Right.
You know, health issues and housing and all of this is systemic. So, you know, one thing that the dominant people, the dominant power in this country is very good at is convincing us that we are the 100% fault and reason for our current condition. And I'm not blaming slavery.
Right.
I mean, slavery has a big deal, but they want us to just forget about the impact of that. We are only 2 to 3, maybe 4 or 5 generations removed from slavery. My great-grandmother just died not too long ago. She was 96 years old. She was born in 1919. I had a very close, I knew her. My son knows her. My son is 12. He knew his great-great-grandmother, born in 1919. Her grandmother was a slave. Her grandmother was a slave. So that's all the things that raised in my family. So so in between slavery, you still had Jim Crow, and then you had civil rights, and now we have a demagogue in the White House. So we're only like 30 years away from this so-called civil rights movement that really was
right.
Say,
yeah,
you know, that black folks should just be able to do all this. The fact that we're even still existing is just a miracle in and of itself. And so it's just really sad and disheartening when you hear some of our people who have just been so brainwashed into believing that the only way we're going to get ahead is by asking them to help us. The only way we're going to get ahead is realizing that we're not.
Carla, we got some questions for you.
Yeah, that's a good point, Carla. Let me. Yeah.
We got some questions for you. Because you went in.
You went in hard. Yes, yes. And I want to reiterate something that you said. We have to stop thinking that we need them in order to establish things. Like the caller said, just like they build up or use us to build up this country, we can do the same thing for ourselves. We don't necessarily need them to do that. We can establish a sewer system. We can establish electricity lines. All these things are based off of what? Natural resources. No one particularly owns the natural resources. They are for everyone. What it is the Europeans or so-called white people have colonized and monopolized the natural resources and sold them back to us. But just like they did that, we can establish these things as well. So that's one of the things I wanted to reiterate. We do not need white people in order to lift ourselves up and establish anything, and we should not be looking for help from them. You know, we should be doing this on our own, like Eliza said. Help yourself. You know what I mean? Self-empowerment. And another thing, as far as the education thing, I wanted to touch on that real quick. Carla made some great points. I mean, we just got to think about it. There's no such thing as good education in America. That's black or white, and I said that on our education show. Basically, they teach you to be a mindless consumer. That is it. And the further you go up, even black people with multiple degrees and doctors and letters and titles all on their name, those be the main ones that don't get with the group economics. Those be the main ones that don't think about black empowerment. Those be the ones that want to just move to the suburbs and get away from black people. Those are the ones that do not look at black empowerment as a good thing, because in their individual life, they're doing well. They got a nice job. They got titles. They got degrees. And they're not interested in the plight of the group. You see what I'm saying? So the further you go into the education system, it's like you're just assimilating to the system, which says, don't worry about black people. Do your individual thing, and you'll be fine. Get a job, retire, and live your life. You see what I'm saying? So those are some of the things we got to look at, but I'm going to let my brother Mufasa get in there.
Yeah, I wanted to add, Carla, you still there? Where did Carla go?
Yeah,
you still
here.
There?
Yeah, I'm
okay.
Here.
I wanted to ask you a question. Like we was talking about, we said a lot tonight about Marcus Garvey and Elijah Muhammad. Marcus Garvey's program was, like we said earlier, Africa for the Africans. And he wanted to see, you know, black people migrate back over to Africa and build up, you know, a strong nation for Africans abroad. And Elijah Muhammad's plan was to do, like you said earlier, was to build a nation in a nation. And I just wanted to ask you, do you agree with both of those aspects of nation building, or do you lean towards one or the other? Meaning, do you believe that we should be, you know, building more so over Africa, migrating to Africa, or do you believe it's possible that we could have a nation in a nation and build here in North America?
So, like Marcus Garvey was a pan-Africanist, and so in the time in which he was speaking, there were still Africans in this country who could remember their homeland, who still knew their language, who could still go back and integrate and assimilate back into their tribe and knew where they came from. So we are so removed from that because of what they have stripped us of as far as our national identity. And so, and then we have to know, like, Africa itself is in just as much turmoil, and the mentality of the Africans have also been distorted, and it's just been kind of ravaged by the Europeans. So as I stated, there is no place in the world where people that are the homelands of people of color that the Europeans have not went into and colonized mm-hmm. and spread they, their hate and their form of just steal, you know, rape, steal, kill, and destroy. That's what they create. Everything that, in my mind, from what I see and what I've read and what I've experienced, what I see that their biggest resource is, their product, the things that they produce, is the things that are destructive to the human soul and the mind and the spirit. And so they are so focused on capitalism and wealth and greed and things that are material. And so everywhere they've gone, so in our country, our homeland of Africa, it will be quite difficult today, particularly with globalism and you have social media and all the things today, because Africans in and of themselves are consumed with self-hatred. They too think they need white folks in their own land, where they got all the resources. And not only are they, you know, so for many years the white folks or the Europeans came to colonize Africa, and now Asia, China is all over in Africa building railroads and everything else, and there's no reason for that. If they taking your resources, building railroads and power lines in your country with your labor. So
this
why
is true.
Can't you do it but the corruption? So, and then as far as Elijah Muhammad is saying about we should build a nation inside of a nation. I think first thing we need to do is build a family inside of a family. And so it's hard to build
that's
a nation.
That's a part of his teachings as well.
Yeah, you have
that's
to
a part of his teachings as well.
Family. And so we, because of so many different factors, like I think I heard one of the hosts say something like, women are raising children to believe this or do certain things, and just the idea that women are raising children is a fallacy. Women should not be raising children. Women should be nurturing children. Men should be raising children. And so just to lead,
but you have to agree that but you do have to agree that that is happening by default.
Yes,
that unfortunately,
is happening.
That is happening. That's part of the problem.
That's part of the problem. You know, to put it on the woman, like, oh, well, women are raising children to be broken and dysfunctional. No, women should not be raising children. So the absence of the man has led to a condition that forced a woman to do something that she was never created to do. And so that's so we are so broken. So I think that for us, the first thing we need to do is quit in my opinion, for us as Africans, the first thing we need to do is like quit focusing on materialistic gay, you know, trying to compete with them from a materialistic standpoint and thinking that's going to bring us happiness and joy and success and wealth. Wealth and the things that truly make your life worth living is not tangible. And so we need to start focusing on and praising people who help other people, not, you know, flock to the person with the big house and the pretty car. So if we start teaching our children to value those things that are just about being a good and honest person, then we will be able to kind of supersede, because good will always evil. But because, you know, the lust of the eye is what it's called.
Right.
We are caught up in the lust of the eye and the lust of the flesh. And so things that look good and feel good, that's what we're focused on as a nation. And it's bad and it doesn't fit us. And that's why we look so out of place, because we're trying to do something that we're not really meant to do, because we're spiritual people. And we've always been spiritual. And so then when we try to imitate a materialistic world, we are out of place. And so I mean it's so many things. But the one thing
it's so
we
many
have
things,
to
but I think that's I think it's so many things.
We don't
but
need
I think
those
that's
folks.
A good point. That's a good point, Carla. And I wanted to take the last 15 minutes of the show to kind of throw some solutions out there. And the call I think she just made a very great point, you know, talking about a solution. Have to let go of the materialism and the things that bond us to this physical world. You know, that's Cosmic Kev talking. So, yeah, we got to let go of the physical stuff that bounds us to this world, the money, the materialism. All those things keep us trapped because we're afraid to get out of our comfort zone and to actually do the dirty work. And like Brother Mufasa said, unfortunately, a lot of times we have to be told or made to do the work for ourselves, which is really a shame. So there's a lot of issues, but I do just want to get, you know, some solutions from Mufasa's way. If you could throw one or two solutions out there for the next 100 years in your perfect world, what would you see black people doing moving forward, my brother?
Well, I'm going to tie this in with a little bit of response to what the caller said, too. The answer for me is for all black people to go to the teachings of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad. The answer is there. The answer is in his program, and we all need to follow suit and soldier up and follow those teachings to the T, because those teachings teach you nation building. They teach you how to, and like the caller said, it starts with the family. And a man learns how to be a man. A woman learns how to be a woman under the guidance of the teachings of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad. You learn those principles. There's also, I know we touched early on the businesses, a little bit about the business that Elijah Muhammad had built up before his passing. But also there are schools across the country under the guide of the Nation of Islam. All you got to do is Google up Muhammad University of Islam, and it's a foundation there and schools of black people self-teaching their children. So the process is there. The problem is black people don't want to submit fully to structure, and that's the problem.
Mm-hmm.
Black people always want to do things, and, you know, we all so different. I want to do it this way. I want to do it that way. We don't want to come under an umbrella and submit to something that can truly benefit us as a whole, because
right.
we just want to be so
that works.
Different. That
There's
works.
Something that works. Yeah, that works.
You know, and if you look at something that works, okay, you're a Christian. That's cool. But you believe in God. Okay? Nation of Islam, we believe in God.
Right.
We need a program. We need laws, structure. Black people need structure, because we're not going to do it just willy-nilly. We are hard-headed
right.
people. And I agree, we
right.
are spiritual people as well, but we are a hard-headed people, especially the ones here in North America. All you got to do is look at our track record. You know?
Yeah.
So if we were to follow, that's the answer, in my opinion. Fall 100% under those teachings and under that program, and watch what we can become as a people. Because when Elijah left this planet, he left her with us coming together as a family unit, teaching us how to come together as a family unit. Left us with the knowledge of doing for self and building for ourselves. You know what I'm saying? Having our own community, taking care of our own communities, doing our own education, doing our own cooking, our own feeding, eating, you know what I'm saying, doing for self, just basically doing for self. And if we
right.
were to go under that program, you will see a difference in the black community. You would almost
Indeed.
See it overnight if we all could submit to that program. I guarantee you, overnight, you will see a change in the community, in black communities across the country. So that's why I'm staying with it.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. This is Collective Minds Radio. If you're just joining us, we got about 11 minutes left to the live stream. Let's see if we can get one more caller. Roger Starr, you there?
Okay, let's go. 314-448. Caller, you have a question or a comment?
Oh, yeah.
just listening to the last call and kind of thinking about the overall topic, I don't know if I can really look into the future and say, you know, what we're going to be like in the next 100 years, but I think an important question to ask is, what will we be able to agree on as a people? I heard a lot of different perspectives, you know, that the caller had and the co-host had, and some of it was agreeing, but some of it was kind of contradictory. And when you listen to it, it makes sense, but or it sounds good, but when you really dive into it, it's like, what does it mean? One thing, for example, is like, we are spiritual people. Like, what does that really mean? When you say, oh, black people are spiritual people, all people have spirit, no matter who you are. So what are you really trying to say in a statement like that? And what does it really mean in terms of, you know, of whatever? But I think we would want to start there in terms of the original question of where you see black people in 100 years is like, what can we ever agree on? If we can't ever agree on anything solid, I think you're going to see a lot more of what you have. If we can ever agree on some things and say, well, yeah, we all are here with this, then you may see some coming together.
Right. Well, let me offer this, caller, real quick, and then I'll let I guess Mufasa address the spiritual thing. But I think one thing that we should be able to agree on is that economically, socially, politically, anytime there is a black and white dynamic, black is at the bottom. Do you think we can agree on that? So whether you agree that it happened by chance or you agree that groups may be conspiring against black people, but that those are the numbers, those are the facts, that black people are at the bottom as a group, we're at the bottom economically, socially, and politically. So that's one thing that I think that we can agree on. Now, how it got that way can be up for debate, but that is
the
fact, and those are the hard numbers.
This is one of the things, like I said, like we talk about it, and it's kind of contradictory because on one hand you say we need to get away from all this materialism, all this stuff that keeps us earthbound. But then you say we look at the numbers, black people are here. But if that stuff don't matter, according to what you say.
No. See, what you're confusing. No. What you're confusing, what I'm saying is we're talking about just a basic standard of living. We're not talking about, we're just talking about a basic standard of living. And when it comes to the numbers, a lot of black people are living below the
poverty line.
And then I'm talking about, socially and politically. So when I talk about socially, that means that black life is not valued in as opposed to white life. You see what I'm saying? When we talk about politically, black people are basically fodder for these political organizations and are used in order to gain leverage. Black people are used to gain leverage by these political organizations. So I'm saying all around. So it's not just I'm talking about people starving, not having meals. You know, this ain't about lavish life. This ain't about materialism. This is about basic necessities that are being denied to certain groups of people, mostly black, you see. So this is what this is about. So it's not about the materialism and buying big houses and cars and all that. This is about some basic necessities and basic things that people are denied largely based on color.
Okay, well, I want to get to the other point. I just say this real quick about that. That's also relative to where you live, because if you're talking about poor in America, it's not the same thing as poor somewhere else.
Right. We're not talking about that, but we're talking about poor in America. Right. We know that America, living poor
which
in America,
really
is not the same as
poor
in the third world country. It still is poor, though.
Hey, do y'all want to, because we're getting 5 minutes, we're like 5 minutes away from the end, so Do y'all want to do a 30-minute OT? Y'all want to do 30-minute OT on this subject, or y'all want to try to wrap it up?
I let Roger call it. I don't know. What
y'all think?
Yeah, we can wrap it. Yeah,
it's been
a good combo. No, I'm not. Trust me, I can go another 30, but I think for the sake of the combo and what Roger said, we can wrap. And
hey, well, since you're gonna wrap it,
but yeah, let you respond. I want you to respond. If you have.
Yeah, since y'all gonna wrap it, and I just want to respond real quick to one or two things that he said. When I say a spiritual people, I mean a people that believe in a higher power. And if you go back into the history of black people, we always believed in a higher power. So this is just a simple thing as that. It's not going into all these different religions and stuff like that. All I'm saying is a belief in a higher power. That's all.
That's most people. That's all people. That's where we get all of these things from, is because we believe it's
well,
a higher
power. I disagree with that.
Well, like, who would you, what second people would you name? They all, it's going to be something that you can't see, whether you call it God, whether you call it a spirit, whatever you call it, it's going to be something intangible that you can that you can relate to on another level, which we would say is spiritual. You know, no matter what it is. So like everybody claims that. Oh, real quick too. What do you think? To this is to Mufasa. What do you think people were doing before Muhammad? Because I know you said his teachings, we should just all follow him.
Before Elijah,
what do you think
Muhammad?
People were? Yeah, like what do you think people were doing before him? They just weren't surviving.
Yeah, they were surviving, but just like Brother Kev said, it's the state of living that we were in. And even in that time of Elijah's coming, you had a lot of poverty, not just with white people, I mean it was black people as well, but you had a lot of black people who were on the bottom in this society, who were getting beaten and abused by the society that we were living in. Just real quick, because we had to do another show to go into some hard details on this. But at that time, yeah, the living conditions of black people were horrible as far as families being together, as far as how we were treated, as far as our being having rights in this country. So, you know, we were just being mistreated as a whole, as a group of people. But I would love to talk to you again on this subject, and we can go a little bit harder.
Cool.
Indeed. So, yeah, this is our Collective Minds. This has been a great conversation, family. Thank you to all the callers. Thank you to all the listeners and all the supporters. We got about 3 minutes left. Again, it's Collective Minds. We will definitely continue this conversation at a later date. But, you know, join us next week. This is Brother Kev on behalf of my brother Mufasa Ra and Rigel Starr. Again, we thank y'all for calling in. And, you know, we're just trying to put some thoughts out there in the ethos. Hopefully this conversation has been constructive. Hopefully you're thinking about yourself and your family, how to progress, how to move forward, how to improve the quality of your life, you know, as you move forward. So, again, hopefully we were able to shed some light on the subject and provide some solutions and just peer into the future of the state of black people in America and worldwide for that matter, and what we need to do in order to, you know, lift ourselves up and,
you know, a better quality of life. Hopefully 100 years from now, 2018, we ain't having the same conversation. Well,
there
might not
go.
Be us,
good
but
night,
we
night.
Have the same conversation
good
of
night.
How black people are being mistreated.
That's right. That's right. Hopefully.
Good
so,
night,
and that was
listeners.
Part of the reason of having this conversation is to put those thoughts out there.
Peace.
We can make a manifest. So, peace, and we will see y'all on next Sunday, 6:05 p.m. Central Standard Time. Through 7:30. Peace.
When y'all be throwing that fist up, you know what to represent, right? Well, if you don't, let me enlighten you.
Black power, black power.
Spending money with my own kind.
Black power, black power.
Buying land that I can call mine.
Black power, black power.
Educated, innovative mind.
Black power, black power.
Unity and support.
of the best combined.
Black power, black power, black power, black power, black power, black power.
Educated, innovative mind.
Black power, black power, black power, black power, black power.
Unity is of the best combined. I just put a black extension on my AR. If my blackness is offensive, I don't say sorry. When it's time to handle business, gotta play a part. If you're not black, I'ma play the race card. No, he didn't, yo, I just play the race card. I'm enlightened, so that's why I feel safe at dark. I'm a warrior, probably got like 8 scars. Revolutionaries can't be scared to wage wars. For the people who oppressed in this cold world, African.